Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as we get ready for Thanksgiving, a lot of us are thinking about a feast, but a new report from the Food Bank for New York City reveals a lot of us, 3.3 million New Yorkers, they say, are just worried about having enough to eat, and emergency food pantries are having a hard time meeting demand for their services. Here to talk about the state of hunger in New York are two people deeply familiar with the landscape. They are Anya Duggan, Vice President for Research, Policy, and Education at the Food Bank for New York City. She wrote that report. And Noura Amatullah, the Executive Director of the Islamic Women's Institute for Research and Development, which, among other programs, runs food pantries in the Bronx. So, Anya and Noura, welcome to WNYC today. Thank you for coming on.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks.
Noura, what do you see at your food pantries? Who's coming in? How many people come to you each week? How is it changing?
Before I answer your question, Brian, I have one little correction to make.
Please.
The organization is actually called the Muslim Women's Institute.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. And we operate the Community Food Pantry in Highbridge and the Benedict Avenue Community Food Pantry. And what we have seen based on our monthly statistics that we have to report to the Feed NYC database is that we have had about a 30% increase in clients using our services since November of 2008.
30% increase in 1 year?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Are you asking people why?
We don't. But what
you want to give people their privacy.
Right, and what is clear is that we have what some of us in food security call kind of like shell shock people who are finding themselves for the first time needing support, needing this type of support to meet their basic needs.
What was that phrase?
A little bit of shell shock about first-time clients. They don't know what to do. They navigate in between embarrassment and need. And they just don't understand how it works. So there's been a lot of instruction to new food security clients.
Let's create a little shell shock among our callers or using our callers, because a lot of Americans don't believe that there is hunger in America, that people actually have needs. So listeners, if you have had your own food security issues, if you have used a food pantry or a soup kitchen, especially in the last year, call us up and tell us what leads you to that choice. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You never hear these voices in the media. Let's hear from people who have to ration food in your own homes and use food pantries or soup kitchens to make ends meet. Anybody willing to call up anonymously if you're ashamed or whatever? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or anyone else who runs or works at or volunteers at a soup kitchen or a food pantry in our area. 212-433-9692, 433-WNYC for Anya Duggan and Noura Amatullah. Anya, the Food Bank for New York City's latest report surveyed New Yorkers about their need for emergency food assistance, and you found the picture actually a little better than last year. What did you find?
Well, it's sort of an interesting description. It's slightly better and it's slightly worse, and I'm going to explain what that means. Last year, around this time, 3.9 million, which is 48% of city residents, reported some difficulty affording food. This year, it's 3.3 million. And what that really represents is that the number last year was what we consider an acceleration of what was already an upward trend. I think what's happened this year is that we've managed to pull back from the brink a little bit, and that's because there's been quite a substantial amount of temporary government and private sector measures put in place so that we can provide more emergency food, and food stamp allotments have been increased for people. But if you look at the big picture, since 2003, The new number in 09 represents a 60% increase in the number of people in the city having difficulty affording food. So it's not better by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that we've pulled back ever so slightly from the brink of crisis.
And how do you explain that six-year increase? Because to hear the top-line economic indicators, the unemployment rate wasn't going up 60% since 2003, except for the spike that's taken place in the last year and a half.
I think that the way that you have to look at it is, you know, what causes hunger, right? What are the underlying causes? And that brings you into the arena where you're looking at the lack of affordable housing, insufficient fixed incomes that elderly individuals and individuals living with disabilities are coping with, and also the hardship for families with children. And so, you know, you have quite a number of people who are working for minimum wage, and minimum wage, even if you're working full-time hours, is not going to bring you to what's considered a federal poverty level. And at the same time, you have to look at the fact that the cost of housing and the cost of food and other basics were increasing quite dramatically from 2002 and 2003 onwards. So some of those costs, particularly food, have leveled out over the past year. But, you know, it really comes back to those temporary government measures that were put in place in 2009. And the best example of that is the stimulus bill, which we all refer to as ARA. And, you know, that did help to put more food on the table. Of course, somebody going to a soup kitchen or a food pantry is still having difficulty affording food. It's just that when people are able to use their food stamp benefit cards in a supermarket, or they're able to get extra food at an emergency food organization, it gives them a sense that their difficulty is easing. But those are all temporary measures, and at the end of the day, when the government help runs out, which it will, everybody is going to be back in the same place, and the situation may even look a little worse than it does right now.
Anthony in Upper Saddle River, you're on WNYC. Anthony, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Good morning. I agree. I mean, it's hard coming to terms.
What's your situation?
In your own business, to feel depressed over everything.
And unfortunately, your line is breaking up pretty bad, and we're only getting a few words. But do I gather that you're on the brink of having to go to a food pantry for the first time?
Yeah, and it is inevitable. You know, it's inevitable. It's inevitable that you know, after being in business for so long, that you have to, you know, that you have to turn to these, you know, turn for assistance. I'm used to giving, not taking.
So, Noura, help Anthony, who's been in business, who's used to giving, not taking, deal with that. You hear the emotional toll that it's taking on him, not just the economic toll. Noura, what do you say to somebody like Anthony who comes in for the first time? Did we lose Noura? Well, Anya, you want to take a shot at that?
Well, actually, you know, Anthony's story is one that we're very familiar with, and Noura mentioned it earlier. The sense of shame that you feel when you're at a soup kitchen or a food pantry is overwhelming. And a lot of new clients, and there has been a staggering increase in the number of new clients in particular, just, you know, they don't know what to do, they don't know what to say, they can't believe that they've ended up on a soup kitchen or food pantry line. You know, what I would say is, they're most certainly not alone. You know, we would estimate, and this is a very conservative estimate, that at least 1.5 million New York City residents are relying on emergency food at this point in order to make ends meet. So that's quite a substantial number of city residents. You're basically talking about one in every five. And in terms of the people reporting difficulty affording food, which is a much bigger universe, you're talking about 2 in 5 New Yorkers. And, you know, the best way to think about that is, the next time you're on a subway car, just look around and imagine 2 in every 5 people, and how many people do you have in every subway car? You know, so it's a staggering number of people, and there really is nothing to be ashamed of. If shame lies anywhere in this story, it's at the feet of government, and particularly at the federal government, because while they've done a lot over the past year, they haven't done anything to permanently solve this problem, and they have not put sustainable solutions in place.
And Anthony, hang in there, man. Good luck to you. And Gloria in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hello, Gloria.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an unemployed private school teacher, and my remark, and I'm coming from Montclair, which is not an area that we typically associate with people having to visit food pantries because we're very suburban.
Mm-hmm.
I have three teenagers. Two of them are athletes. They can easily eat me out of house and home. I probably will have to visit a pantry for Thanksgiving, but also I'm saving very hard as a widow for the children's education. They're getting near college age. I just refuse to tap those resources and spend all the money that I'd need to spend just in order to get on food stamps. So I'm really caught in a bind because I'm unemployed. I have the opportunity to comparison shop and look for bargains, and we've changed our way of eating, but it is very difficult, and I just want to express how grateful I am for people who are speaking up for this need and expressing the services that they've provided to us.
What do you tell your teenagers?
I tell them that we just have to start getting a little more creative and that rice is a staple for three quarters of the world.
Gloria, thank you for your courage in calling up. And Noura Amatullah, who I think we have back now, how about the fact that our first two calls came from Montclair and Upper Saddle River?
Well, it speaks to the fact that the crisis of hunger is not limited to the inner city, particularly as it is a byproduct of the economic crisis. And, you know, oftentimes people say, well, the people who are out of work, this is their opportunity to volunteer. But sadly for organizations like the one I run, and I think for the food bank also, is that we don't need our middle-class income earners to be volunteers. We need them to go back to work because they are the bulk of people who donate to the organizations we run.
Catherine in New Rochelle has a site that she uses and a recommendation for some of our earlier callers. Catherine, hi.
Hello. I'm calling because my family and I actually had a situation where we have a second home in Florida and we lost our income, so now we're responsible for two mortgages. And, you know, unfortunately right now we're looking at a short sale because obviously we can't afford to pay our mortgage in New Rochelle and also the one in Florida. And one of the things that were recommended by the person who was helping us with our bills and trying to, you know, sort out where the money should be going, she recommended something called Angel Foods, which is a website you go to, and they have different sites in the Bronx and Westchester. And basically what you do is you purchase, let's say, $100 worth of food, but for $50. And it comes, you can buy meats, you can buy grains, you can buy fresh fruits, and you just go to the site, you go to wherever the site is in your borough, and then you go and you pick up the food there. And they have special packages for, let's say, Thanksgiving, and they have varying amounts depending on the size of your family, and it's been really helpful.
Catherine, thank you. Angel Food is the name of the website.
That's correct.
Thank you so much. We're almost out of time. Anya, have you had to cut back at the soup kitchens and food pantries in your network on the amount of food that each client gets or cut distribution hours with demand up so much?
Actually, even though there has been extra food in the network of emergency food organizations, many of them have had to reduce either hours of service, the amount of food per household, or they've had to turn away individuals. In fact, half of the emergency food organizations in the city are still reporting that they're turning away individuals because the increased amount of food going into the system is not matching the increased number of people coming to them for help. And, you know, the real message in this report, Brian, is the fact that the temporary measures that were put in place this year illustrate that it's possible to change this picture. It's possible to solve this problem, and it wouldn't take very much. But, you know, it does require looking at some permanent solutions. Yeah. Throwing food at the problem is not the answer. We want food in order to ensure that families get to eat tonight and tomorrow. But all of that food just you know, it just represents a Band-Aid on the problem if we're not looking at affordable housing and all of the other underlying issues.
Nora, I understand you're actually picking up turkeys from a food bank warehouse today.
Yes, I'm actually at the food bank warehouse. And, you know, just to kind of follow up on what Anya just said, you know, one of the areas also is to kind of begin to reshape the language. So we're really not dealing with emergency food so much as we're dealing with food security and working to ensure that everyone in the United States is food secure, that they're able to have enough nutritional intake to sustain them.
How many people are coming to your pantry to get turkeys this year?
We have a client base of about 2,300 people, but I'm only going to have about 500 birds, so I'm going to have to be creative and negotiate. They've got a lot of produce. And, you know, before we close out, Brian, one other thing that is also very pressing for us in the food security industry here in the city in particular, is that as things advance, as the food security sector gets more into technology use, we're also forced to move from volunteer staff to people who are computer literate and have technology skills, people we have to hire, you know, pay. You have to pay them a salary. And unfortunately, food security is still considered something that volunteers should do.
Yes.
So there's not a lot of resources for operational expenses.
I'm your last
food kitchens and soup pantries.
I hear you.
Pantries and soup kitchens.
15 seconds. Anya, somebody on our website says they don't know where to donate food. They were at Fairway, surprised that there wasn't some kind of a food donation drop. What's the best way to donate actual food if people want to do that?
They should contact us, and the easiest way to do that is to go on the website foodbanknyc.org. And the other thing I would say is if people want to help, aside from financial donations, which we always appreciate, the best way to help right now is awareness raising. And I would ask everybody to tell one other person that they heard this story today and just spread the word.
And you have a network of like 1,000 pantries around just the five boroughs if people are looking for a local place nearby to donate something in the meantime while they're raising awareness. And I certainly hear that that's your main point. From the Food Bank for New York City, Anya Duggan. From the Muslim Women's Institute for Research and Development, which, among other programs, runs food pantries in the Bronx, Noura Amatullah, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Somebody from the New Republic noticed that Sarah Palin's new book doesn't have an index. So she indexed it herself. We'll talk to her in a minute.